Chapter 3. In my dream, I am falling forever through darkness. Falling, falling, falling. Is it still falling if it has no end? And then a shriek, something ripping through the soundlessness, an awful high wailing like an animal or an alarm. Beep, 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 beep. I wake up stifling a scream. I shut off the alarm, trembling, and lie back against my pillows. My throat is burning, and I'm covered in sweat. I take long, slow breaths and watch my room lighten as the sun inches its way over the horizon, things beginning to emerge. The Victoria's Secret sweatshirt on my floor, the collage Lindsay made me years ago with quotes from our favorite bands and cut-up magazines. I listen to the sounds from downstairs, so familiar and constant it's like they belong to the architecture, like they've been built up out of the ground with the walls. The clanking of my father in the kitchen, shelving dishes, the frantic scrabbling sound of our pug, Pickle, trying to get out the back door, probably to pee and run around in circles. A low murmur that means my mom's watching the morning news. When I'm ready, I suck in a deep breath and reach for my phone. I flip it open. The date flashes up at me. Friday, February 12th. Cupid Day.
Get up, Fammy!
Izzy pokes her head in the door.
Mommy said you're going to be late.
Tell Mom I'm sick. Izzy's blonde bob disappears again. Here's what I remember. I remember being in the car. I remember Elodie and Allie fighting over the iPod. I remember the wild spinning of the wheel and seeing Lindsay's face as the car sailed toward the woods, her mouth open and her eyebrows raised in surprise, as though she'd just run into someone she knew in an unexpected place. But after that, nothing. After that, only the dream. This is the first time I really think it, the first time I allow myself to think it. That maybe the accidents, both of them, were real. And maybe I didn't make it. Maybe when you die, time folds in on you and you bounce around inside this little bubble forever, like the after-death equivalent of the movie Groundhog Day. It's not what I imagined death would be like, not what I imagined would come afterward. But then again, it's not like there's anyone around to tell you about it. Be honest. Are you surprised that I didn't realize sooner? Are you surprised that it took me so long to even think the word? Death? Dying? Dead? Do you think I was being stupid? Naive? Try not to judge. Remember that we're the same, you and me. I thought I would live forever, too. Sam, my mom pushes open the door and leans against the frame. Izzy said you felt sick. I think I have the flu or something. I know I look like crap, so it should be believable. My mom sighs like I'm being difficult on purpose. Lindsay will be here any second. I don't think I can go in today. The idea of school makes me want to curl up in a ball and sleep forever. On Cupid Day? My mom raises her eyebrows. She glances at the fur-trimmed tank top that's laid out neatly over my desk chair, the only item of clothing that isn't lying on the floor or hanging from a bedpost or a doorknob. Did something happen? No, Mom. I try to swallow the lump in my throat. The worst is knowing I can't tell anybody what's happening or what's happened to me. Not even my mom. I guess it's been years since I talked to her about important stuff, but I start wishing for the days when I believed she could fix anything. It's funny, isn't it? When you're young, you just want to be older, and then later you wish you could go back to being a kid. My mom's searching my face really intensely. I feel like at any second I could break down and blurt out something crazy, so I roll away from her, facing the wall. You love Cupid Day, my mom prods. Are you sure nothing happened? You didn't fight with your friends? No, of course not. She hesitates. Did you fight with Rob? That makes me want to laugh. I think about the fact that he left me waiting upstairs at Kent's party, and I almost say, not yet. No, Mom, God. Don't use that tone of voice. I'm just trying to help. Yeah, well, you're not. I bury deeper under the covers, keeping my back turned to her. I hear rustling and think she'll come and sit next to me. She doesn't, though. Freshman year, after a big fight, I drew a line in red nail polish just inside my door, and I told her if she ever came past the line, I'd never speak to her again. Most of the nail polish has chipped off by now, but in places you can still see it spotted over the wood like blood. I meant it at the time, but I'd expected her to forget after a while. But since that day, she's never once stepped foot in my room. It's a bummer in some ways, since she never surprises me by making up my sheets anymore or leaving folded laundry or a new sundress on my bed like she did when I was in middle school. But at least I know she's not rooting through my drawers while I'm at school looking for drugs or sex toys or whatever. "If you want to come out here, I'll get the thermometer," she says. "I don't think I have a fever." There's a chip in the wall in the exact shape of an insect, and I push my thumb against the wall, squishing it. I can practically feel my mom put her hands on her hips. "Listen, Sam, I know it's second semester, and I know you think that gives you the right to slack off." "Mom, that's not it." I bury my head under the pillow, feeling like I could scream. "I told you, I don't feel good." I'm half afraid she'll ask me what's wrong and half hoping she will. She only says, "All right, I'll tell Lindsay you're thinking of going in late. Maybe you'll feel better after a little more sleep." I doubt it. "Maybe," I say, and a second later I hear the door click shut behind her. I close my eyes and reach back into those final moments, the last memories, Lindsay's look of surprise and the trees lit up like teeth in the headlights, the wild roar of the engine searching for a light, a thread that will connect this moment to that one, a way to sew together the days so that they make sense. But all I get is blackness. I can't hold back my tears anymore. They come all at once, and before I know it, I'm sobbing and snotting all over my best Ethan Allen pillows. A little later, I hear scratching against my door. Pickle has always had a dog sense for when I'm crying, and in sixth grade, after Rob Cochran said I was too big of a dork for him to go out with, right in the middle of the cafeteria, in front of everybody, Pickle sat on my bed and licked the tears off one after another. I don't know why that's the example that pops into my head, but thinking about that moment makes a new rush of anger and frustration swell up inside of me. It's strange how much the memory affects me. I've never mentioned that day to Rob. I doubt he remembers. But I've always liked to think about it when we're walking down the hallway, our fingers interlaced, or when we're all hanging out in Tara Flute's basement and Rob looks over at me and winks. I like to think how funny life is, how so much changes, how people change. But now I just wonder when exactly I became cool enough for Rob Cochran. After a while, the scratching on my door stops. Pickle has finally realized he's not getting in, and I hear his paws ticking against the floor as he trots off. I don't think I've ever felt so alone in my life. I cry until it seems amazing that one person could have so many tears. It seems like they must be coming from the very tips of my toes. Then I sleep without dreaming. Escape tactics. I wake up thinking about a movie I once saw. The main character dies somehow, I forget how, but he's only half dead. One part of him is lying there in a coma, and one part of him is wandering the world, kind of in limbo. The point is, so long as he's not completely 100% dead, a piece of him is trapped in this in-between place. This gives me hope for the first time in 2 days. The idea that I might be lying somewhere in a coma, my family bending over me and everyone worrying and filling my hospital room with flowers, actually makes me feel good. Because if I'm not dead, at least not yet, there may be a way to stop it. My mom drops me off in Upper Lot just before third period starts. 0.22 miles or not, I will not be seen getting out of my mom's maroon 2003 Accord, which she won't trade in because she says it's fuel efficient. Now I can't wait to get to school. I have a gut feeling I'll find the answers there. I don't know how or why I'm stuck in this time loop, but the more I think about it, the more convinced I am that there's a reason for it. "See you later," I say, and start to pop out of the car. But something stops me. It's the idea that's been bugging me for the past 24 hours, what I was trying to talk to my friends about in the tank. How you might not ever really know. How you might be walking down the street one day and bam, blackness. It's cold, Sam. My mom leans over the passenger seat and gestures for me to shut the door. I turn around and stoop down to look at her. It takes me a second to work the words out of my mouth, but I mumble, "I love you." I feel so weird saying it. It comes out more like olive juice. I'm not even sure if she understands me. I slam the door quickly before she can respond. It's probably been years since I've said "I love you" to either of my parents, except on Christmas or birthdays or when they say it first and it's pretty much expected. It leaves me with a weird feeling in my stomach, part relief and part embarrassment and part regret. As I'm walking towards school, I make a vow. There's not going to be an accident tonight. And whatever it is, this bubble or hiccup in time, I'm busting out. Here's another thing to remember. Hope keeps you alive. Even when you're dead, it's the only thing that keeps you alive. The bell has already rung for third period, so I book it to Chem. I get there just in time to take a seat, big surprise, next to Lauren Lornet. The quiz goes off, same as yesterday and the day before, except by now I can answer the first question myself. Pen, ink, working, Mr. Tierney, book, slam, jump. "Keep it," Lauren whispers to me, practically batting her eyelashes at me. "You're going to need a pen." I start to try to pass it back as usual, but something in her expression sparks a memory. I remember coming home after Tara Flute's pool party in 7th grade and seeing my face in the mirror lit up exactly like that. Like somebody had handed me a winning lottery ticket and told me my life was about to change. "Thanks." I stuff the pen into my bag. She's still making that face. I can see it out of the corner of my eye. And after a minute, I whip around and say, "You shouldn't be so nice to me."
"What?"
Now she looks completely stunned. Definitely an improvement. I have to whisper because Tierney's started his lesson again. Chemical reactions, blah, 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 transfiguration. Put two liquids together and they form a solid. 2 + 2 does not equal 4. "Nice to me. You shouldn't be."
"Why not?"
She squinches up her forehead so her eyes nearly disappear. "Because I'm not nice to you." The words are surprisingly hard to get out.
"You're nice,"
Lauren says, looking at her hands, but she obviously doesn't mean it. She looks up and tries again. "You don't..." She trails off, but I know what she's going to say. "You don't have to be nice to me."
"Exactly,"
I say.
"Girls?"
Mr. Tierney bellows, slamming his fist down on his lab station. I swear he goes practically neon. Lauren and I don't talk for the rest of class. But I leave Chem feeling good, like I've done the right thing.
"That's what I like to see."
Mr. Daimler drums his fingers on my desk as he walks the aisles at the end of class collecting homework.
"A big smile, it's a beautiful day."
"It's supposed to rain later,"
Mike Hefner interjects and everyone laughs. He's an idiot. Mr. Daimler doesn't skip a beat.
"And it's Cupid Day. Love is in the air."
He looks straight at me and my heart stops for a second.
"Everyone should be smiling."
"Just for you, Mr. Daimler," I say, making my voice extra sweet. More giggles and one loud snort from the back. I turn around and see Kent, head down, scribbling furiously on the cover of his notebook. Mr. Daimler laughs and says,
"And here I thought I'd gotten you excited about differential equations."
"You got her excited about something,"
Mike mutters. More laughter from the class. I'm not sure if Mr. Daimler hears. He doesn't seem to, but the tips of his ears turn red. The whole class has been like this. I'm in a good mood, certain everything will be okay. I've got it all figured out. I'm going to get a second chance. Plus, Mr. Daimler's been paying me extra attention. After the Cupids came in, he took a look at my 4 roses, raised his eyebrows, and said, "I must have secret admirers everywhere." Not so secret, I said, and he winked at me. After class, I gather up my stuff and go out into the hall, pausing for just a second to check over my shoulder. Sure enough, Kent's bounding along after me, shirt untucked, messenger bag half open and slapping against his thigh. What a mess. I start walking toward the cafeteria. Today, I looked more carefully at his note. The tree is sketched in black ink, each dip and shadow in the bark shaded perfectly. The leaves are tiny and diamond-shaped. The whole thing must have taken him hours. I stuck it between two pages of my math book so it wouldn't get crushed. Hey, he says, catching up with me. Did you get my note? I almost say to him, it's really good, but something stops me. Don't drink and love? Is that some kind of a catchphrase I don't know about? I consider it my civic duty to spread the word. Kent puts his hand over his heart. A thought flashes. You wouldn't be talking to me if you could remember. But I push it aside. This is Kent McFuller. He's lucky I'm talking to him at all. Besides, I don't plan on being at the party tonight. No party, no Juliet Sykes, no reason for Kent to wig out on me. Most important, no accident. More like spread the weirdness, I say. I take that as a compliment. Kent suddenly looks serious. He scrunches up his face so that all the light freckles on his nose come together like a constellation. Why do you flirt with Mr. Daimler? He's a perv, you know. I'm so surprised by the question it takes me a second to answer. Mr. Daimler is not a perv. Trust me, he is. Jealous? Hardly. I don't flirt with him anyway. Kent rolls his eyes. Sure. I shrug my shoulders. Why so interested? Kent goes red and drops his eyes to the floor. No reason, he mumbles. My stomach dips a little bit and I realize a part of me was hoping his answer would be different, more personal. Of course, if Kent did confess his undying love for me right there in the hallway, it would be disastrous. Despite his weirdness, I have no desire to publicly humiliate him. He's nice. And we were childhood friends and all that. But I could never, ever, ever date him. Not in a million lifetimes. Not in my lifetime, anyway. The one I want back. Where yesterdays are followed by today's and then tomorrow's. The bowler hat alone makes it impossible. Listen, Kent shoots me a look out of the corner of his eye. My parents are going away this weekend and I'm having some people over tonight. Uh-huh. Up ahead, I see Rob loping toward the cafeteria. At any second, he'll spot me. I can't handle seeing him right now. My stomach clenches, and I leap in front of Kent, turning my back to the cafeteria. Where's your house again? Kent looks at me strangely. I did basically just set myself up like a human barricade. Off Route 9? You don't remember? I don't respond, and he looks away, shrugging. I guess you wouldn't, really. You were only there a few times. We moved just before middle school from Terrace Place. You remember my old house on Terrace Place, right? The smile is back. It's true. His eyes are exactly the color of grass. You used to hang out in the kitchen and steal all the good cookies, and I chased you around these huge maple trees in the front yard, remember? As soon as he mentions the maple trees, a memory rises up. Expanding like something breaking the surface of water and rippling outward. We were sitting in this little space in between two enormous roots that curved out of the ground like animal spines. I remember that he split two maple wing seeds and stuck one on his nose and one on mine, telling me that this way everyone would know we were in love. I was probably only 5 or 6. The last thing I need is for him to remind me of the good old days when I was all knees and nose and glasses and he was the only boy who would come near me. Maybe trees kind of all look the same to me, you know? He laughs, even though I wasn't trying to be funny. So, you think you'll come tonight? To my party? This brings me back to reality. The party. I shake my head and start backing away. No, I don't think so. His smile falters a little. It'll be fun. Big.
senior memories, best time of our lives, and all that crap.
Right, I say sarcastically, high school heaven. I turn around and start walking away from him. The cafeteria is packed, and as I approach the double doors, one of which is propped open with an old tennis shoe, the noise of the students greets me with a roar.
You'll come, he calls after me. I know you will.
Don't hold your breath, I call back, and I almost add, it's better this way. The rules of survival.
What do you mean you can't go out?
Allie's looking at me like I just said I wanted to go to prom with Ben Farsky, or Fartsky, as we've been calling him since fourth grade. I sigh. I just don't feel like it, okay? I switch tactics and try again. We go out every weekend. I don't know. I want to stay in like we used to.
We used to stay in because we couldn't get into any senior parties, Allie says.
Speak for yourself, Lindsay says. This is harder than I thought it would be. I flash on my mom asking if I'd had a fight with Rob, and before I can think too much about it, I blurt out, it's Rob, okay? We're having issues.
I flip open my phone, checking for texts for the millionth time. When I first came into the cafeteria, Rob was standing behind the registers, loading his fries with ketchup and barbecue sauce, his favorite. I couldn't bring myself to go up to him, so instead, I hurried to our table in the senior section and sent him a text. We have to talk. He texted back right away.
About?
Tonight, I wrote back, and since then, my phone's been silent. Across the cafeteria, Rob is leaning against the vending machines talking to Adam Marshall. He has his hat twisted sideways on his head. He thinks it makes him look older. I used to love collecting all these little facts about him, storing them together and holding them close inside of me. Like if I gathered up all the details and remembered them, the fact that he likes barbecue sauce but not mustard, that his favorite team is the Yankees even though he prefers basketball to baseball, that once when he was little he broke his leg trying to jump over a car, I would totally understand him. I used to think that's what love was. Knowing someone so well, he was like a part of you. But more and more, I'm feeling like I don't know Rob. Allie's jaw actually drops. But you're supposed to, you know. She kind of looks like a mounted fish with her mouth open like that, so I turn away, fighting the urge to laugh. We were supposed to, but I've never been a good liar, and my brain goes totally blank.
But Lindsay prompts.
I reach into my bag and pull out the note he sent me, which is now crumpled and has a piece of gum, half unwrapped, sticking to it. I push it across the table. But this. Lindsay wrinkles her nose and flips open the card with the very tips of her fingernails. Allie and Elodie lean over and they both read. They're all silent for a second afterward. Finally, Lindsay closes the card and pushes it back to me.
It's not that bad, she says.
It's not that good, either. I was only trying to fake an excuse to keep us away from the party tonight, but as soon as I start talking about Rob, I get really worked up. Love ya? What kind of crap is that? We've been going out since October.
He's probably just waiting to say it, Elodie says. She pushes the bangs out of her eyes.
Steve doesn't say it to me.
Well, that's different. You don't expect him to say it. Elodie looks away quickly, and it occurs to me that maybe, despite everything, she does. There's an awkward pause, and Lindsay jumps in.
I don't see what the trauma is. You know Rob likes you. It's not like it would be a one-night stand or anything.
He likes me, but I'm about to confess that I'm not sure that we're good together, but at the last second, I can't. They would think I was insane. I don't even understand it myself, really. It's like the idea of him is better than the him of him. Look, I'm not gonna have sex with him just so he'll say that he loves me, you know? I don't even mean for the words to come out, and for a second I'm so startled by them, I can't say anything else.
That isn't why I was planning to have sex with Rob, to hear the words, I mean. I just wanted to get it over with. I think. Actually, I'm not sure why it seemed so important.
Speak of the devil, Allie mutters. Then I smell lemon balm and Rob's planting a wet kiss on my cheek.
Hey, ladies.
He reaches over to take a fry from Elodie, and she moves her tray just out of reach. He laughs.
Hey, slammer. Did you get my note?
I got it. I look down at the table. I feel like if I meet his eyes, I'll forget everything. Forget the note, and how he left me alone, and how when he kisses me, he keeps his eyes open. At the same time, I don't really want anything to change.
So, what I miss?
Rob leans forward and puts his hands on the table, a little too hard, I think. Lindsay's Diet Coke jumps.
The party at Ken's and how Sam doesn't want to go,
Allie blurts out. Elodie elbows her in the side and Allie yelps. Rob swivels his head and looks at me. His face is completely expressionless.
Is that what you wanted to talk about?
No, well, kind of. I wasn't expecting him to mention the text, and it flusters me that I can't tell what he's thinking. His eyes look extra dark, almost cloudy. I try to smile at him, but I feel like my cheeks are all stuffed with cotton. I can't help but picture him swaying on his feet and holding up his hand and saying,
5 minutes. Well,
he straightens up and shrugs.
What then?
Lindsay, Allie, and Elodie are all staring at me. I can feel their eyes like they're emitting heat. I can't talk about it here. I mean, not now. I tip my head in their direction. Rob laughs, a short, harsh sound, and now I can tell he's mad and just hiding it.
Course not.
He backs away, both hands raised like he's warding something off.
How about this? You let me know when you're ready to talk. I'll wait to hear from you. I would never want to, you know, pressure you.
He elongates some of the words, and I can hear the sarcasm in his voice, just barely, but it's there. It's obvious, to me at least, that he's talking about way more than our having a talk. But before I can respond, he gives a flourish with his hand, a kind of bow, and then turns around and walks away.
Jeez.
Allie pushes around the turkey sandwich on her plate. What was that about?
You're not really fighting, are you, Sam?
Elodie asks, eyes wide.
Before I have to answer, Lindsay makes a kind of hissing noise and juts her chin up, gesturing behind me.
Psychopath alert. Lock up the knives and babies.
Juliet Sykes has just walked into the cafeteria. I've been so focused on today, on fixing it, on the idea that I can fix it, I've totally forgotten about Juliet. But now I whip around, more curious about her than I've ever been. I watch her drifting through the cafeteria. Her hair is down and concealing her face, fuzzy, soft hair, so white it reminds me of snow. That's what she looks like, actually. Like a snowflake being buffeted around in the wind, twisting and turning on currents of air. She doesn't even glance up in our direction, and I wonder if even now she's planning it. Planning to follow us tonight and embarrass us in front of everybody. It doesn't seem like she would have it in her. I'm so focused on watching her that it takes me a second to realize Allie and Elodie have just finished a round of psycho killer qu'est-ce que c'est and are now laughing hysterically. Lindsay's holding up her fingers crossed like she's warding off a curse, and she keeps repeating,
"Oh Lord, keep the darkness away."
Why do you hate Juliet? I ask Lindsay. It's strange to me that I've never thought of asking until recently. I always just accepted it. Elodie snorts and almost coughs up her Diet Coke.
Are you serious?
Lindsay's clearly not prepared for the question. She opens her mouth, closes it, and then tosses her hair and rolls her eyes like she can't believe I'm even asking.
I don't hate her.
Yes, you do.
It was Lindsay who found out that Juliet wasn't sent a single rose freshman year, and Lindsay's idea to send her a valigram. It was Lindsay who nicknamed her Psycho and who, all those years ago, spread the story of Juliet peeing on the Girl Scout camping trip. Lindsay stares at me like I've lost my mind.
Sorry, she says, shrugging. No breaks for mental health patients.
Don't tell me you feel bad for her or something, Elodie says. You know she should be locked up.
Bellevue, Allie giggles. I was just wondering, I say, stiffening when Allie says the B word. There's still always the possibility that I've gone totally, clinically cuckoo. But somehow I don't think so anymore. An article I once read said that crazy people don't worry about being crazy. That's the whole problem.
So, are we really staying in tonight? Allie says, pouting. The whole night?
I suck in my breath and look at Lindsay. Allie and Elodie look at her, too. She has final say on all of our major decisions. If she's hell-bent on going to Kent's, I'll have a hard time getting out of it.
Lindsay leans back in her chair and stares at me. I see something flicker in her eyes and my heart stops, thinking that she'll tell me to suck it up, that a party will do me good. But instead, she cracks a smile and winks at me.
It's just a party, she says. It'll probably be lame anyways.
We can rent a scary movie, Elodie pipes up. You know, like we used to.
It's up to Sam, Lindsay says, whatever she wants.
I could kiss her right then. I cut English with Lindsay again. We pass Alex and Anna in Hunan Kitchen, but today, Lindsay doesn't even pause, probably because she's trying extra hard to be nice to me and she knows I hate confrontations. I hesitate, though. I think of Bridget putting her arms around Alex and looking at him like he's the only guy on earth. She's annoying, okay, but she deserves way better than him. It's too bad.
Hello? Stalk much?
Lindsay says. I realize I'm just standing there staring past the ripped-up flyers advertising $5 lunch specials and local theater groups and hair salons. Alex Lament has spotted me through the window. He's staring straight back at me. I'm coming. It's too bad, but really, what can you do? Live and let live. In The Country's Best Yogurt, Lindsay and I both get heaping cups of double chocolate with crushed peanut butter cups, and I add sprinkles and Cap'n Crunch cereal. I have my appetite back, that's for sure. Everything is working out the way I planned it. There won't be any party tonight, at least not for us. There won't be any driving or cars. I'm sure that this will fix everything. That the kink in time will be ironed out, that I'll wake up from whatever nightmare I've been living. Maybe I'll sit up gasping in a hospital bed somewhere, surrounded by friends and family. I can picture the scene perfectly. My mom and dad tearful, Izzy crying while she hangs on my neck, Lindsay and Allie and Elodie and... An image of Kent flashes through my head and I push it away quickly. And Rob. Of course, Rob. But this is the key, I'm sure of it. Live the day out, follow the rules, stay away from Kent's party. Simple.
Careful, Lindsay grins, shoveling a huge spoonful of yogurt into her mouth. You don't want to be fat and a virgin.
Better than fat with gonorrhea, I say, flicking a chocolate chip at her. She flicks one back.
Are you kidding? I am so clean, you could eat off me.
The Lindsay buffet. Does Patrick know you're giving it up like that?
Gross.
Lindsay's wrestling with her jumbo cup, trying to dig out the perfect bite. But we're both laughing and she ends up lobbing a full spoonful of yogurt at me. It hits me right above the left eye. She gasps and claps one hand over her mouth. The yogurt slides down my face and lands with a plop, right on the fur covering my left boob.
I'm so sorry.
Lindsay says, her voice muffled by her hand. Her eyes are wide, and it's obvious she's trying not to laugh.
Do you think your shirt is ruined?
Not yet, I say, and dig out a big scoop of yogurt and flick it at her. It hits her in the side of her head, right in her hair. She shrieks, "Bitch!" And then we're ducking around the TCBY, hiding behind chairs and tables, digging big scoops of double chocolate and using our spoons like catapults to peg each other.
You can't judge a gym teacher by his handlebar mustache. Lindsay and I can't stop cracking up on the way back to school. It's hard to explain, but I'm feeling happier than I have in years, like I'm noticing everything for the first time. The sharp smell of winter, the light strange and slanted, the way the clouds are drawing over the sky slowly. The fur of our tank tops is completely matted and gross, and we have water stains everywhere. Cars keep honking at us, and we wave and blow them all kisses. A black Mercedes rolls by, and Lindsay bends over, smacks her butt, and screams, $10, $10! I punch her in the arm. That could be my dad.
Sorry to break it to you, but your dad does not drive a Mercedes.
Lindsay pushes her hair out of her face. It's stringy and wet. We had to wash off in the bathroom as the woman at TCBY screamed at us and threatened to call the police if we ever stepped foot in the store again.
You're impossible, I say.
You know you love me, she says, grabbing my arm and huddling up next to me. We're both freezing.
I do love you, I say, and I really mean it. I love her. I love the ugly mustard yellow bricks of Thomas Jefferson and the magenta tinted halls. I love Ridgeview for being small and boring, and I love everyone and everything in it. I love my life. I want my life.
Love you too, babes.
When we get back to school, Lindsay wants to have a cigarette, even though the bell for 8th is going to ring any second.
2 trags, Lindsay says, widening her eyes, and I laugh and let her pull me along because she knows I can never say no to her when she makes that face.
The lounge is empty. We stand right next to the tennis courts, huddled together while Lindsay tries to get a match lit. Finally, she does, and she takes a long drag, letting a plume of smoke out of her mouth. A second later, we hear a shout from across the parking lot.
Hey, you, with the cigarette!
We both freeze. Ms. Winters, Nick Nazi.
Run! Lindsay screams after a split second, dropping her cigarette. She takes off behind the tennis courts, even though I yell, "Over here!"
I see the big blonde poof of Ms. Winters' hair bobbing over the cars. I'm not sure if she's seen us or just heard us laughing. I duck behind a Range Rover and cut across Senior Alley to one of the back doors in the gym as Ms. Winters keeps screaming, "Hey! Hey!" I grab the handle and rattle it, but the door sticks. For a second, my heart stops, and I'm sure it's locked. But then I slam up against it, and it opens into a storage closet. I jump inside and close the door behind me, heart thumping in my chest. A minute later, I hear feet pound past the door. Then I hear Ms. Winters mutter, "Shit!" And the footsteps start retreating backward. The whole thing, the day, the fight in the country's best yogurt, the almost bust, the idea of Lindsay crouching somewhere in the woods in her skirt and new Steve Madden boots strikes me as so funny I have to clap my hand over my mouth to keep from laughing. The room I'm standing in smells like soccer cleats and jerseys and mud, and with the stack of orange cones and bag full of basketballs piled in the corner, there's barely enough room for me to stand. One side of the room is windowed, and it looks into an office. Otto's, probably, since he basically lives in the gym. I've never actually seen his office. His desk is piled with papers, and there's a computer flashing a screensaver that looks like it's a cheesy picture of a beach. I inch closer to the window, thinking how hilarious it would be if I could bust him with something dirty, like some underwear peeking out of a desk drawer or a porn mag or something. When the door of his office swings open, and there he is. Instantly, I drop to the ground. I have to scrunch up in a ball, and even then, I'm paranoid that my ponytail might be peeking up over the windowsill. It sounds stupid considering everything that's been happening, but all I can think in that moment is, if he sees me, I'm really dead. Goodbye, Allie's house. Hello, detention. My face is sandwiched up next to a half-open duffel bag that looks like it's full of old basketball jerseys. I don't know if they've never been washed or what, but the smell makes me want to gag. I hear Otto moving around his desk, and I'm praying that he doesn't come close enough to the desk to see me bellying up to a bunch of old sports equipment. I can already hear the rumors. Samantha Kingston found humping driver's ed cones.